No Direction and Paizo team up to bring you the Gen Con 2018 seminar coverage. No Direction would like to thank our advertising sponsor, the Roll for Combat Starfinder Actual Play Podcast. Listen at rollforcombat.com.
Hi there, everybody. Welcome to another exciting Pathfinder Playtest panel. This one is how to playtest for the newest version of the Pathfinder role-playing game. I am Jason Bowman. I'm the director of game design at Paizo. And with me here on the panel, I have...
I'm Stephen Reddy McFarlane, the senior designer.
Mark Seifter, designer.
And I'm Logan Bonner, also a designer.
So today what we're going to do is we're probably going to spend 15, 20 minutes talking about what the playtest process is going to be for this version of the game. And after that, we'll just kind of open it up to questions to both everybody here in the audience and those of you on Twitch. Hello.
Hi, Twitch.
To start off, how many of you participated in the beta playtest last time? Anybody?
10 years ago.
Oh, we at least have one. Wow. It's amazing how few there are, how much the audience has grown since that point, so that now the newer players outnumber those who were here 10 years ago.
Yeah, our first panel.
Jason,
today,
did you raise your hand?
Yeah.
What was that?
Did you raise your hand?
No, I didn't participate in that playtest. Oh, okay. That was for nerds. Yeah. All right. So this time around, we're going to be doing something a little different. How many of you have participated in any of our playtests? We've done them, a lot of them, over the years for like Advanced Player's Guide, Ultimate Combat, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, a fair number of you. Okay. So what we've typically done is released the thing we wanted to playtest, said, play with it and tell us what you think. And then we had a bunch of message board posts. And for those of you who have been on the message boards, you know that it tends to be whoever can shout the loudest seems like they're the rightest. Our job ultimately is to
kind of... That's how the design team works too.
Yeah, well, that's fair. That's why I do have a loud, booming voice.
And he's the director.
That's right.
And Steven's the senior designer.
Who is also loud. All right, so, our job, generally speaking, has been to kind of cut through that noise, look for the problem that's underlying the kind of passionate arguments, and find out where we kind of can make the game better. That's served us well over the past 10 years. But for this new version of the game, we knew we needed to kind of upgrade our methodology on this. We needed to find a way that allowed us to test aspects of the game a little bit more scientifically. And one way to do that is to take the adventure out of the equation, right? If we standardize the adventure and give you an adventure to play, then what we're really testing is all the player mechanics that are interacting with that adventure. It'll also tell us about the adventure and its assumptions as well. We can kind of test it on both angles, but we allow the players to be the variable. And let's be honest, that's the most fun anyway. So, and with the release of the new version of Pathfinder, we also released an adventure called Doomsday Dawn. So if you've picked up the playtest rulebook and you're hoping to run games for your home group, we highly recommend that you pick up Doomsday Dawn. Doomsday Dawn is divided up into 7 sections. We are going to be playtesting those sections over the next few months in sequential order. So starting now, we are officially playtesting part 1 of Doomsday Dawn, The Lost Star. It's for first level characters, and I'm not going to tell you anything else about it. One of the things that we're really stressing with this is we don't want you to get ahead. There are elements of the testing and the methodology that... we want you to just make the characters you're going to make and play the game. If you know what's coming or you know what's about to happen, it could really distort some of our playing metrics.
And so when Jason says we don't want you to get ahead, he doesn't mean that it's not okay. He doesn't mean it's not okay to like keep playing the adventure past when our official time is. He means don't peek ahead and be like, oh, wow, that one's all about that kind of a monster. Well, I'm going to build something that's exactly good at killing that.
Yeah, don't do anything that would piss off your GM.
Don't metagame. So the first playtest window is open now, and it's going to go for about the next three and a half weeks. We're giving you a lot of time on this first one because we realize that everyone has to learn the game. Fortunately, it's only for first level characters, so at least on that end, it's a little straightforward, a little simple. So you got a few weeks to learn the game, make first level characters, and play the first adventure. These adventures are designed to be played in about 2-ish sessions, about 4 hours each. If you play one long session, you can probably get through the whole thing in one session. I know the first one is very doable in one, like, 5 or 6 hour session. So we're not asking you to play, you know, 50 hours. What we are doing is getting a whole lot of people to play 5 or 6 hours and getting feedback on that. Now, to go with that, instead of message boards, not that we don't have message boards, and I'll talk a bit about that in a minute. What we're going with this time is surveys. So we have clients set up through SurveyMonkey, and we are doing very extensive surveys. And by very extensive, I think by the end of this, we will have written like somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 or 60 surveys to make all this work. You don't have to take all of them. That's not how this works. Many of them are designed for various different parts of the game. So, for example, with this first one, there's a survey for GMs, and there's a survey for players. The player survey asks about the player side of the event and how it went and how certain things happened during the game. The GM side asks about their side of the screen to kind of tease out kind of how some of the things work, how some of the pieces come together, how some of the things played out, to test some of our assumptions about adventure design and how the characters interacted with them. So after this first part wraps up, there's going to be the additional parts after part one. So we'll move on from part one to part two. And from that
those
point,
have a similar structure in their surveys.
Yeah, and they will also have a player survey, a GM survey. And I should also note that all of these have kind of an open-ended general response survey that just has fields where you can type in your thoughts. They just ask kind of general questions. All the other ones tend to be, you know, how many times did you rest during this adventure? How many times did you run out of resonance? Questions like that. We will ask you to track some things during play. To that end, there is part of the survey download, part of the download for this game is a tracking sheet. The tracking sheet has a bunch of very specific questions that we want you to keep track of during the game. Most of them are for the GM, a few of them are for the players. Because some of them are numbers, and we realize that if we don't tell you to track those things in advance, you might not remember what they are, right? Saying, oh, how many times did you, you know, rest, for example? Well, you might not remember that unless you kind of are noting it during the game. Oh, we rested again. Oh, we rested again, right? Just so that we keep track of that information.
Because hopefully you're too busy having fun with the awesome adventure.
Yeah, yeah. To be honest, we want you to have a lot of fun with this, but we also need you to keep track of a couple things. That way we can get good data about how the game is actually playing. So after that, the parts will come in 2 weeks. So we'll go from part one to part two, and part two will only have 2 weeks to play, part three will only have 2 weeks to play, marching us forward to the point where we will wrap it up in mid-November. That's a long time, but it's going to go by pretty quick. Now, if your group can't meet quite that regularly and you have to play out of sequence a little, that's not a problem. You play at your own schedule. The schedule is there to keep us moving along because we, at the same time, are going to be doing live Twitch streams of our own playthroughs of the adventures starting in about 2 weeks from now, I think, is when we're going to do the first one. We're going to start playing Lost Star, and for those of you who have already played it, you can watch and see what we did or didn't do or screwed up or messed up.
Or drank.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I'm going to write that down. You bastards. All right.
Wait, we can drink through these?
No. And then after each part is closed, we're going to be hosting kind of a adventure wrap-up show for each one of the parts of the adventure. So we're going to do kind of a live Twitch show where we talk about the results from the surveys that we've gotten up to that point, what it tells us about the game. We're going to take that as an opportunity to answer questions, both from our message boards and from the Twitch stream. And we'll be able to share some interesting factoids with you. You'll notice the surveys have a couple fun questions scattered around in them where we're just trying to ask some things that we're hoping gives us something interesting to play with. So we'll see how it goes. We ask some questions about some of the peculiarities about your characters. And I think it'll be fun to share some of that information with you. And what we're also going to be able to do is tell you what we're changing. What we're looking at altering based on your feedback. That's why this is so important. I can't oversell it. The actual play of this adventure is really critical for us to have a better understanding of our game. It's one thing to read the book and go, oh, well, that seems really too good. until you see it in play, it's night and day, right? I think of numerous things in the past in my role-playing career where I've looked at things and went, that's clearly too good. There's no way they could allow that in the game. And then you see it at the table and you're like, oh, no, that's not really that good. Mystic Thurge, anyone?
Yeah.
This class is the most broken class. Oh, my God, you get so many spells, and then you play, and you're like, oh, God, I can't cast all these spells. I don't know what I'm doing with these, and none of these are as good as that guy's. So
I actually think back in those days, you sent me an email about how broken Mystic Thurge was.
I probably did. Yeah, no, there's a decent chance of that.
It's and like, then Steven, I then you I need then, to look then at this.
Yeah, then, that was yeah. I didn't have a message board to scream at you.
Right.
All right. So
I felt like the only person online who did not think the Mystic Thurge was broken in those days. I was like,
of course you were, Mark. No,
I was like, guys, it's not as good at any of the individual spells, and just everyone was saying it was broken.
All right. So, let's see. What else? Is there anything I'm forgetting about the basic?
There's also going to be a series of kind of general like class. Classes. So if you played a barbarian, like the player survey of an individual adventure part isn't going to talk specifically about the characters, but there are going to be surveys to kind of figure out what people like the best about the classes.
Ancestries classes, and so some other general concepts. Those surveys are also important for you if you decide, well, I know Jason just said it's crucially important to play our playtest adventure, so we've standardized some things, but whatever, I'm going to play my own homebrew adventure, or maybe I'll do both. Those general surveys are a great way for anyone to give feedback, no matter what they've been playing. And speaking of other options for things to play, there's also Pathfinder Society playtest scenarios. At Gen Con, right now, not sure if they're sold out if you don't have a ticket, so you might not be able to get into them, but there are three different Pathfinder Society adventures. There is the quest pack, Rose Street Revenge, a first level series of four quests. There are two fifth level adventures, Arc Lord's Envy, which is one of our first adventures that really lets you do a bunch of stuff in Nex, and Raiders of Shrieking Peak. There's also going to be a 10th level adventure coming out in the coming month for Pathfinder Society for a total of four, each of which will have their own set of player survey, GM survey, and optional free response survey if you have something you want to tell us that takes a little bit more space.
Yeah, to hop back just a bit to the other surveys, those will be available about a month from now is when we're going to bring those online. We don't want to bring them on now because we'd like you to have a chance to play these classes before you start giving us feedback on them. That way we don't get a whole bunch of feedback just based on a read. Not that a read isn't valuable to us. I do want to stress that we do value people just being able to look at our stuff and say, this doesn't seem quite right.
Especially for things like reading comprehension.
Exactly. But we do want to give some people some time to actually play the classes before we open up these surveys. There'll be one for each class. There'll probably be one large survey for the ancestries. There'll probably be one large survey just for general play. There'll probably be a survey that looks at other kind of rules options, like feats, spells, magic items, things like that. Just kind of asks general questions about these sorts of things. And we'll use that to kind of narrow in on where we felt the power balance of the game was right, and you're going to tell us where we hit the nail on the head and where we messed that up. I find that the moment we hand our game over to 50,000 people playing it, we get a lot more detailed information about how things work than just our kind of anecdotal, yeah, that seems good.
Or our alpha groups.
Yeah.
In some cases, some of us have played or run like over 100 games of this so far, but compared 100 games to 50,000 people all playing multiple games, and it's just so much more.
In the next week, all of you will play this game more than we have in the past 3 years combined. We have logged thousands of hours playing this game, testing various parts of it, putting pieces together, taking them apart, playing more and more. But that pales in comparison to what you guys are going to be able to tell us. That's that. Talking about the adventures, it is important to note that the adventures jump forward in level. You do not play the same characters necessarily through all of them. I don't want to spoil any pieces, but you will be making a series of characters throughout this adventure. You'll be jumping around levels. So we do start at low levels, and there are adventures towards the end that are very high-level play because we want to make sure we get that right. High-level play in Pathfinder has always been a bit of a rough spot. And we want to make sure that it's a lot smoother now, that the play goes a lot smoother, a lot faster. That is going to be challenging, though, because usually we assume, you know, when you're playing a character at high levels, you've built that character organically. So you're building pieces on top of other pieces, and that makes a certain amount of familiarity. That makes it a little easier to play. This is going to be a little bit more of a shock for many of you, I suspect. We certainly had a bit of that on our side, where it's like all of a sudden you're playing a character with all these bits and pieces that you built right then and there and started playing. So there will be a little bit of culture shock in there on that and learning curve on that, but that's something we'll just have to cope with for the playtest just so that we can get the data we need. We just didn't have time to be like, all right, you're going to play this entire AP. It's going to take you from first to 20th level, and it's going to take a year and a half to play, and I need you to do that in 3 months. So lock yourself in a room and play until you're done.
Forget your job. Forget your kids.
Yeah. No bathroom breaks, no food. Just go. What else? So other ways you can participate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are looking at a more scientific approach. But that doesn't mean we're not going to be reading message boards, even how painful that can be at times. And that is a perfectly good way. Like, if you have thoughts about something that a lot of times you don't think the survey is doing, yeah, feel free to post away, in all caps if you want to.
And let us know. Give them permission to post in all
exclamation
caps.
Exclamation points. No. All over the damn place.
Do those, but say message for Steven in the title. You know,
given this is a how to play test panel, though, actually, to piggyback off what Steven said, let's talk a little bit about doing message board posts in a way that will be most effective for all of you and all of you on Twitch as well to get your point across and to deliver your information in a way that makes it more likely that we're going to be able to use it.
All caps and hyperbole.
So
right?
that is one example. So let's say you've been playing and you decided that for whatever reason, fire giants were just causing serious issues. They killed all your characters group. They did too much. And you had two choices. And like Steven said, the first choice is, OMG, all caps, fire giants are so broken. You guys murdered my characters and the players, and you killed my dog, and you're the most awful people who ever existed, and you should just go kill yourselves or something like that. Or your other option...
Well, that's not kind of crazy, man.
Grimdark, Mark.
Wow.
Your other option is there seems to be a problem with fire giants. We think their attack bonus is too high because they were always hitting everybody's AC.
Let me give you an example.
Even the paladin with the shield, they were able to hit him
Having the specific problem broken down, rather than just saying, we had problems with these, to kind of say they were hitting too often specifically or something like that.
Right,
is
we
really
think
helpful.
If you lower their accuracy or perhaps make their damage lower because of their high accuracy, if that's an important part of the monster, those might help. So between those two, the second one, actually, even though Steven said the first one would be good, the second one is definitely going to be more likely to be a productive way to get that information across. And so sometimes it could make sense to wait a little bit. If you're still feeling emotional about the fire giants killing the characters, I'm serious. I've been a playtester playtesting for at least these guys before I worked at the company just to playtest on the boards. And I would wait a little bit, let my thoughts percolate, make sure I'm out of the moment, and then I post.
So let me share a very, I consider a funny story to sort of illustrate that point. I used to have a coworker who remain nameless, Sean. who we used to share an office and great guy and everything else, and we'd have these great conversations about game design and whatnot. And then Sean would go on the message boards and read various things, and it became obvious to me over time that there was people on the message boards that really enjoyed baiting him because it was a little bit easier to do. And so Sean's upset. He's like, Steven, read this post, right? And so I read this post, and I have I kind of laugh at sort of the tomfoolery that goes on the internet sometimes. And I'm like, oh, that's really interesting, Sean. And he goes, what do you mean it's interesting? And I'm like, no, that second paragraph. Ignore the first one where he's calling you an idiot, right? But the second paragraph, he makes a really good point here. Sean's like, oh yeah, that is a good point. And I'm like, But as soon as you start with something negative online, it eventually changes the tenor of the conversation. And you might have you might be mad because you've noticed something that we're not looking at. But as soon as you get all jerky, it causes most people to get all jerky in return, and they're not going to see the brilliant thing that you're trying to tell us. So start with the brilliant thing and be nice.
Right.
It's the Roadhouse rules. Be nice.
The parts of our playtesting that frustrate me the most is when someone has a really good salient point that gets totally lost in raging hyperbole.
Yeah. And anybody who isn't an idiot could have seen.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, well, you started off by calling us all idiots. And,
that's okay.
Because we are.
At least start off, dear idiots.
Dear idiots.
That's fine.
So, I think the thing to remember is that, we may not all agree what makes for the best game, what makes for the best play environment, but we're all trying to head in the same direction, right? Your fellow posters on the board, even the ones that are being vitriolic, they're still doing it because they want a game that is the what they think is the most fun for them. And that may not be the game that's the most fun for everybody else. So sometimes we have to say, yeah, sorry, that's not going to be the way it is.
But it also may be exactly.
It may be exactly the way it needs to be, right? But approaching that from an angle of, hey, I'm just going to tell you what the problem is and what I saw as a part of the rules that aren't working the way that maybe they're intended to work, right?
Right. And
also, it's a lot easier for us to interact with that sort of feedback than it is just, I am going to scream at you and then the mods are going to delete this entire thread.
Also, please don't just tell us things that it's like, you feel like you know the answer to what's going wrong. If there's something you don't understand in the text, that's really useful for us to know. Right. We can rephrase things. We can explain things more in different places. Anything where you hit uncertainty is really helpful to know.
I think it is also good to note that, and this isn't just for our own egos and sanity, if there are things in the rules that you really do like that are really gelling for you and working exactly the way you hoped they had worked, let us know that too, right? I think it's really easy to point at all the things that aren't working right, and it kind of gives the overall impression that all of this is just terrible, no one likes anything, it's all bad. We know that that's not the case, but sometimes it's kind of hard to be like, well, there are a lot of people saying they don't like this thing, but is there anyone who likes this, right? Or is this just, there's a few people who are angry and no one else wants to chime in? I'm not asking you to get in debates with people on our message boards. By all means, don't do that if you don't have the fortitude to do it. Maybe you shouldn't
chime in. No, it's fair. You can chime in, say that you liked it, and then go. And you don't have to, if they're like, oh yeah, you're totally wrong for liking it, you don't have to engage.
The message boards are a place where you can express your ideas with fellow posters. And if you have questions about the rules, you can oftentimes ask them there, and someone will help. Someone will be like, oh, I saw that rule. It was over here. You might get somebody who says, what are you, dumb? It's right here. But, at least then you'll know where it is.
Just try to be polite to each other. The way we process new ideas, if it comes in confrontationally, it's processed in a different way than if it doesn't, and it's less effective for you to us, for you to other posters, and from us to you. We're going to try to talk to you in a way where we're working together.
Insults puts everybody on the defensive. And you all are great people, so I'm sure none of you would ever get in an argument on the internet.
So I want to talk about one other thing for the playtest. A lot of times when we're talking about the playtest, we get the question, will my comments and my feedback actually make anything change? Is the game already done and this is a formality? It's definitely not. There are already things we're looking at changing and are in the process of working up different schemes for, and we are open to changing pretty much everything in the game. In fact, there are some systems in the game that a lot of times if we weren't sure which path to go, we went, all right, let's try the most daring one and see if it crashes and burns. And if not, we know we have a backup that's a little more conservative. There's a lot of things in that book that we are trying out that we aren't 100% confident on. We really want to see how it plays across groups and groups and groups.
I want to talk about the daring thing for a moment because I saw some responses the last time we said it. Well, we tried the most daring ideas in the sense that the thing that was the riskiest but that had a really big payoff if it worked. Mm-hmm. Some people thought that meant, oh, you just did the craziest possible thing for no reason other than to be crazy.
No, it could have been way crazier.
It could have been way crazier than that. when we say daring there, we mean risky for a really great reward for something that can do something pretty cool in the game if we can get it to work.
Yeah, I mean, if we wanted to go more risky with death and dying, the moment you fell to zero, you fell into the, you know, the ethereal plane where you had to then fight a Grim Reaper to come back to life. We nearly did. No, we didn't.
Now I want to do that.
Yeah, now I kind of do want to do that. Now I'm like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Did we just solve the death and dying problem?
I think that's about the only death and dying system we didn't try.
It'll be like the hacker in old versions of Shadowrun, except it'll be the person who's fighting death.
The moment you fall to zero, you then end up in this weird mini game where you have to fight death to regain consciousness.
Back on Jason's turn. What do you do to fight death?
Tabletop games.
What do you do to fight death? I challenge him to a guitar battle.
A chess game.
Sir, you're not a bard.
Yeah. It's funny. That is one of the systems that I think has gone through more iterations than just about anything else. The system for death and dying in the book is not one that we're perfectly happy with, and I am almost positive elements of it are going to change between now and the final version of the game. Yeah. We, at one point in time, had, what, four different competing ways that you died?
In the official file.
Yeah.
But we had to pick one for the playtest book. That's the only time we consolidated down.
And now we're working on several more competing ways for you to die.
Yeah, now we have a handful more that we're
And we just created a new competing.
Yeah.
That's right.
And maybe the
right
best
here.
One yet.
Right here. I think, you know, for anybody who did participate in the original beta playtest, you would know that a lot of things changed between the alpha, the beta, and the final of Pathfinder Last Test. Fighters had an entirely different weird system of maneuvers that they could do. Skills went from just selections to ranks. I had this really super complicated way of tracking whether or not something was in cover, and we killed all of that for the final. There's a lot of things that
Barbarians had rage points instead of rage points.
Oh, yeah.
You and I had a conversation about that at the first PaizoCon.
I mean, there was a lot of things that were like, I'll try this and see if it sticks. And it, in some cases, did, in some cases, didn't. So the playtest will tell us that. There are going to be parts of this game that end up changing. That's good. That's why we're doing it. If we just wanted to publish whatever game we felt like publishing, we wouldn't bother doing a playtest. They're a lot of work. We are going to be spending the next 4 months combing through feedback, reading message boards, and doing all of that while also trying to make all the books that come out then and after. So it's a lot of work to make this happen. But we're doing it because we know it makes for a better game. And that's what this is all about.
Yeah, and one of the things, Jason was mentioning earlier, getting positive feedback, that also prevents you from being the person who, you know, 3 years from now comes back and says, you know, I really miss that rule in the playtest that you got rid of. Right. Knowing when people are enjoying
rules
helps us
from
not get rid of them.
Beta, but yeah.
If only anyone had told me that.
My little brother liked the rage points from the Barbarian, so.
See? I didn't know.
Yeah.
All right. So,
I never told you until just now in this panel.
All right, so we're about halfway through the panel right now. So why don't we open it up for questions? We'll take questions kind of about anything. If you got playtest questions, I'd like to focus on those. And we'll be repeating all the questions so that folks on Twitch can hear us. Just so if you're wondering why we're repeating everything, over here.
The surveys. Are you taking details on character builds as well? Like if someone insists, I'm going to play Raceland, I'm rebuilding Raceland first level. Hey, I kind of suck.
So the question was, what level of detail are we taking on character builds? We've created the surveys for some of the early parts of the adventure up to this point. We have not created the character-specific surveys yet. We're in process of formulating how those are going to work, but we got about a month to figure it out. For the adventure surveys, we ask some basic details, but we don't drill down to, like, what skill choices did you make? We do ask what your ancestry was, what your background was, what your class was, and a few other details, just so that we have a sense of what it is that you were playing at the table, so that later on when we ask you, hey, how did you fare in this encounter, we can then look at that and say, oh wow, all the wizards had a real hard time in this encounter. Why is that? Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, that's an obvious example. But we might find other patterns in there that tell us about the game that say, hey, this character didn't have good efficiency in a lot of these. Everyone who played a, you know, bard didn't feel like they contributed much in half the encounters in this adventure. We need to do something about that.
Yeah, we do know that for the individual class surveys, we know we're going to be asking things like, what bloodline did you pick for a sorcerer, or, you know, what deity and domains did you choose for a cleric? We don't quite know yet whether we're going to dig down into super deep layers of the onion. I think we kind of have to start working on those surveys and see if it seems too onerous.
I would say for a question as specific as, or a comment as specific as, I wanted to play Raceland with an 8 constitution wizard and I didn't work out until 10th level, the example that you gave, that seems like something for the free response part of the survey in particular, because we're unlikely to ask exactly that question. But in the free response, you could say, we have one that's like, what could have worked better for your characters? It's like, well, my low constitution wizard build idea just didn't have enough support until middle levels.
Especially because it's not our IP.
Now I'm going to add, you know, wizard question 39C. Did you attempt to recreate Baseline? Yes, no. No? All right, fine.
Get a lot of... who the hell is Baseline?
Baseline. I would think that when we do get to the class surveys, we will ask questions like, you know, did you take the following feats, right? You know, we'll drill down and try and figure out which feats are working for us and in which ways, because that is the heart of a lot of these classes. So I think we will drill down into information that specific. I doubt we'll ever drill down so deep as like, well, you know, tell us about what gear you had on you. That may not be very useful to us just in a macro
sense. Or we'll do a small number like, did you choose a staff for a wizard? And that some of those kind of core pieces of gear we might talk
about. I think we'll try and suss out kind of some of the paths you took, but not every step. Over here.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to read the playtest path yet, so maybe this is answered in there. But is the game path balanced around your group of four? Is it okay to have any variance there? Okay. So like 3 or 5?
So the question was, is the Doomsday Dawn adventure, how many players is it designed for? The adventure is designed for 4 players. I think there are a few of them that talk about what happens if you have more than that, because for those adventures it's a little bit more important. For most of them, we're pretty fungible on that. And the game itself does have pretty simple guidelines for like, do you have 5 or 6 players? Do this to most encounters and it'll work out just fine. I think if most people kind of follow the common sense rules on that, I think it, you know, it's like, oh, there were 4 monsters in this fight and I have, instead of 4 players, I have 6. Well, I should probably just add 2 more monsters of the same type, and now I'm still balanced.
We've put in simple and powerful guidelines for adding or subtracting a player, although to note, subtracting players down below 4 definitely gets you to a point where you lose more than the guidelines suggest because you're losing variety as well. However, as Jason said, in some sections, it was so important that it be exactly balanced that we gave the way to do those guidelines in the book. For most of them, we're going to let you apply those guidelines because it's not so important. But for the ones where we're like, we really need to know how well the PCs do in this series of fights, and it really matters how well they do on each one. I think that was one of Jason's. He put in all of the adjustments.
Yeah.
Generally, if you know you're going to be running for more or fewer than 4, take a look at the guidelines that are in the playtest rulebook and prep that adventure ahead of time. The most challenging ones are going to be like single monster fights where you're going to need to, especially if you've got a smaller group, you're going to have to kind of come up with something to make that work.
And we have some templates that let you go up or down by one level that are very easy to use.
Those will be in the monster book. Playtest Bestiary PDF.
And so that will help a little bit against a solo enemy, but they're not always the best way to handle a solo enemy because it's always better when you have a really big group to add more action economy on the other side instead of just, here's one big thing you can barely hit at all and that can kill any one of you in one hit, but you have so many people that you'll kill it anyway.
Yeah, I think as a note for your playtesting equipment that you'll need obviously the playtest rulebook, you'll need the Doomsday Dawn Adventure if you're going to be running that, and you'll need the Playtest Bestiary, which is a free PDF you can get from Paizo.com. With that, there's also the Playtest Tracking Sheet. This is also available from PathfinderPlaytest.com. This is the sheet that has both, it has a GM tracking sheet and a player tracking sheet that speaks directly to Doomsday Dawn. So the GM tracking sheet has a bunch of things for you to track as the GM and a couple individual questions for the various parts of the adventure that you need to track. The player tracking sheet is more of just here's, I think, 7 things that we want you to keep track of in each adventure, and most of them are really straightforward. You'll know them when you hit them. It's like, did you run out of resonance? Mark every time that happens, right? You know, and we just want to know some of those details every time you play.
It's also worth noting, in case you haven't mentioned it already, all of the materials can be picked up for free in PDF form on PathfinderPlaytest.com. So
every single one of them.
There's no cost to
the adventure, the monster sheet, PDF, everything. Everything's free. Next question.
Someone with a player count, does it assume that the playtest has like the standard composition? Like the party goes through, we didn't have an arcane captain, or we didn't have a dedicated family.
That's you do. The question was, does the adventure require a kind of standard party composition? The answer is no. Although I will say that there are some parts of the adventure that come with very specific character construction guidelines, and I'm not going to say any more than that. And you'll know them when you see them.
The GM surveys are going to ask what classes were represented in the group. So if we're seeing a whole bunch of weird results and we look at those and it's like, our party was 4 paladins, we'll have that
information. Or it's like, our party was 4 melee barbarians and that was it, and we only fought flying archers. And we were level 2.
It seems like it was really hard.
Yeah, it's like we didn't know what to do. Well,
just had to sit there and lose hit points.
Bleed.
Wait until they run out of arrows like Zap Brannigan with the kill bots.
I'll send wave after countless wave of my own men.
Hit all right, preset kill limit.
Do monsters have preset kill limits? No. No, they
don't.
They
do have a very small number of arrows usually, though.
Back here.
Will there be any surveys based on non-mechanical aspects of second edition, such as information layout and content?
So the question is, will there be surveys that are beyond just the game itself, but actually speak to the information design and the layout of the books? I believe we will have at least one survey that focuses kind of just on what we did to make the book look like what it looks like. I know there's some controversy right out the bat because we're using symbols to help define how we do things. So everything that's an action in the book has this little diamond symbol. There's some people who say, I can't read those, I can't make those out. And we're very sensitive to that issue. One of the things that I think I believe has gone up now is that we do have a version of the book that is called the... it's called the accessibility. I think we might have renamed it at the last minute, but it's something akin to that. We have an accessibility version, a text-to-reader version of the rulebook that is designed specifically for people who use like text to they read aloud the text so that, you know, if they're blind, they can still enjoy the game. So we created a version of the PDF where all of the symbols were changed into their word. But this version also has no art. It has all of the tables are slotted in after blocks of text. They're not graphic designed in any way because that actually gets in the way of the reader doing its job. So it's not a pretty version, but it's there to serve that function in particular, and we hope people get some good use out of that. But I think for us, we're also looking for ways to make it so that text to readers will read the symbols as what they're supposed to be. There's actually a really cool trick on how to do that, and we just figured it out. So we're hoping to employ that for the final and see how it goes. I think we are very, very sensitive to the fact that there are people who play our games in different ways, and we want to make sure that they can enjoy our game. Pathfinder is for everyone, and if you have a disability in some way, shape, or form, we want to make sure that the game is still accessible to you.
Thank you.
Over here.
Just wondering, with the playtest, it's complete with all the core classes and races and whatnot. Should we expect that this is the content that is in here is the same content that's going to be on release, or are you planning on adding any more content in? I mean, I imagine that's the whole point of the playtest.
That's a good question. So the question was, is the playtest book going to be the exact content mix that is in the final version of the book? The answer to that is no. I would say it's pretty.
The boundaries will be the same.
I think the boundaries will be the same. I think it's pretty unlikely that we'll suddenly add another class or take one away. To do that would be very, very difficult. I think ancestries, there's a little bit of fungibility in there. We might change up how some of the ancestries work a little bit. But I honestly can't see us like adding a whole bunch of them or taking away a whole bunch of them between now and the final. I think the place where you're going to see the most addition and some subtraction to the game is in the other content. Skills, equipment, magic items. I think we're aiming to have the book be bigger than this book. This book's 432 pages. The final book will probably be closer to the original size of the Pathfinder Core Rulebook, which was 576. I realize that makes for a really big, really heavy book. I'm sensitive to that, but we got a lot of game to cram in there. So it's either... Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, when somebody gives you a headache, you need to be able to hit them with something heavy. So, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I can make the book, 16 pages lighter as long as you don't mind, not getting magic armor. That's fine.
We didn't
that's
need
not
that.
An acceptable
You'd have to cut
answer.
A lot more than just magic armor.
Yeah, no, it's true. That's not even close to 16 pages. So, yeah, I think that's what you'll see.
Well, yes, and
the question was.
Oh yeah, the question was: Pathfinder's a big book. New players find big books intimidating. Was that taken into account? So not only is Pathfinder First Edition the core rulebook a big intimidating book? It's a big dense book that sometimes is its information flow is also intimidating. And so one of the things that, and you'll see it a little bit in this book, and you'll see it even more so in the other one, is we do want to give you all of the information that you need to play this pretty complicated and robust game. We do want to have that flow of information be a lot less cumbersome to the new player. So they can find out very quickly, these are the sections I need to go to. This is the totality of the game. But these are the things that I need to go to right now. And beginning concepts are presented in a different manner and everything else. So, yeah, people who are still afraid of big books might still go, oh, I don't know if that's the game for me. But we hope that the people who do open up go, oh, this is a very friendly big book.
It's a lot easier to find the information for actually starting to build your character because there are a few things in the original one that are kind of in – a little bit hard to find places, but like if you go to your class, it's going to tell you all your class advancement in one table and that kind of stuff. So you're going to kind of see everything at a glance rather than kind of having to hunt around for different parts of it.
This speaks to flow through and information design as well, right? Where we looked at the book and said, okay, there are some chapters of this book that are really here for rules reference. They are giant. Here are all the spells. Here are all the magic items. Here are all the general feats. We know that you are going to use those as an alphabetical index, kind of part of resource. So we wanted to make sure that when you're not in those chapters, you're being led to where you need to go. The book helps guide you to the choices you need to make and does it in a step-by-step manner. So it's a smarter design that hopefully means that you're able to sit down from kind of day zero, which I'm wagering many of you are just about at right now, and go from that to having a correct and legal character inside a few hours, right? Especially for your first time, because you are going to have to read, the intro chapter and walk yourself through the process. It's going to take a little bit. But it's not to the point where once you realize that, the second time you go through it, it'll drop from, say, 2 hours down 2 or 3 hours down to 30 minutes. Right? It goes really quick. I'm down to the point where I can generate first level characters in like 15 minutes. And that's doing everything. I'm not cutting any corners. I'm making every decision that needs to be made and noting them on a character sheet. And some of that comes from the way we design the character sheets as well, right? Because they help walk you through where you need to go in the book and categorize the choices that you have to make so that you know where to go and find them.
Yeah, to add on to that, I'm running a playtest game, and we got some new folks at Paizo who I invited to the game. So one of our new developers, Ron, was joining in my playtest game as a 10th level bard, and he came up to me afterwards the next day. He said, I'm worried, Mark, because from the time I opened the file until I finished my 10th level bard, it took me 2 hours to build this character. That might be a long time. I was like, Ron, that's amazing. That is so much faster than learning a new game and then building a 10th level bard would be in Pathfinder First Edition. If that's true for everyone else, I'm just going to be thrilled. Now, not everyone probably is going to learn things as quickly as Ron because he is very, very sharp at picking things up, but will want to know how long it took you guys to build characters. In fact, we asked that on every survey.
Part of one of the things that we ask in front of each player survey is how many minutes did it take you to build your character from start to finish? It's one of the things we just ask you to track.
Yeah. My girlfriend's 10-year-old daughter, who's never played a role-playing game before, made her first level character in about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, that makes us pretty happy.
But she's very bright.
We'll see. All right. Over here.
So the cheat sheet that's at the playtest table, is that part of any of the documentation, the action and the statuses? Is that sheet available?
It's not in cheat sheet form.
So the question is, there's a cheat sheet that's floating around the con, and you're wondering if it's available.
For the demos.
So that cheat sheet was made by me, 6 months ago. It's probably not 100% accurate anymore. There's been some changes to the game since that thing was made. So I think we need to look at possibly recreating something like that. I think it would be of a good help to people as they get started here.
Yeah, I think it's also one of those things where I'm not entirely sure we want to have that early in the early going, partially because we want to see if the book teaches you that information efficiently, whereas a cheat sheet, that's a great thing to include, but we want to know if the full text is readable and understandable. And then, if we do a cheat sheet in the final book or something like that, that could make a lot of sense. But we have to make sure that the rules are complete.
Yeah, it's funny. Internally, we had a whole bunch of people ask, so are you going to include pre-gen characters in the playtest adventure? And I'm like, no, that defeats the entire point. I need them to make their own characters. If I just want to run 10,000 simulations of this guy fighting that fight, I don't need... Well, I need more time, but I don't need 50,000 gamers to do it.
10,000 Valorai.
The Valorai.
The Ride of the Valorai.
We have playtested this game, and it is perfect for all of the Valorai in the universe.
That's right. The rest of you get bent. Okay. All right, we got a couple minutes left, so let's take some more questions. You in the back.
How much of the playtest feedback will be on the adventure? So obviously you'll be releasing a full version of core book, second edition, Bestiary. Will feedback on the adventure go into basically the second edition printed published version of the adventure path, I'll call it?
The Doomsday Dawn?
Yeah.
So the question here is, what sort of feedback are we getting on the adventure, and what's going to be the ultimate outcome of that feedback? So the Doomsday Dawn will not be printed in the full second edition. It's really just here for us to play test. So in that, it's kind of an artifact of this period in time only. But that said, we are asking a fair number of questions about Doomsday Dawn, because there are some things that we're looking to do a little differently with adventure design going forward. And I know the PFS scenarios ask some questions about the adventure design and layout specifically. You'll see some more of that from us, asking about how parts of the adventure went, how they were readable, how they were usable as the GM. We kind of want to know what about the way we present adventures works and doesn't work as well. So it may not have a direct impact on any Doomsday Dawn, because we're not reprinting it, but it will certainly help influence us when it comes to adventures going forward. The new adventure paths, the new modules, whatever they might be.
And there are also a couple adventures that approach the same thing in different ways. There's one that says some encounters could use flip mats, and here are the flip mats you could use. And there's another one that says here are some encounters, and you can draw your own maps for these or build your maps. And so we're kind of testing both approaches and seeing which one's more popular, or if neither of them's popular, to kind of inform how we do adventure paths and modules in the future.
Up here.
Is there going to be any in-game lore justification for the world suddenly working different, losing classes, etc.?
Well, the world hasn't lost any classes.
The question is there going to be any in-game justification for the sudden shift in the world? So I would say, first of all, we're trying to make there be as little shift in the world as possible. I think the biggest thing people point to and say, well, there's goblins now. And I said, well, there's been goblins before. They just haven't been player characters. And there's two things that are at work here. One is, when it comes to goblins in specific, we're not just flipping a switch one day and saying everyone in Galarian now loves goblins. That's not it. They're going to have to go through a bit of a journey to reach, cultural acceptance in many places. That's an interesting story to tell. to tell the story of an outsider becoming accepted in a community that ultimately doesn't trust them and kind of doesn't want them around. There's some powerful messages there, and those are worth exploring. Those are stories worth telling. So we're going to explore that. I don't think anything is just like you wake up one day and all of a sudden everything's radically different. So we tried to keep as much of the story of the game the same as possible. Now, obviously, with a new version of the game, there's going to be some classes and stuff that don't exist yet that we are going to have to either figure out what we're going to do with, whether or not we're going to recreate that, whether or not we're going to decide that it's served by a different thing. One of the things people have probably noticed really quickly is something that we didn't really talk about in the ramp up to this, is that Cavalier is actually in the playtest rulebook. It's an archetype. It's not a class. It's an archetype that anybody can take. So if you want to be a wizard cavalier, you can be a wizard cavalier. You want to be a paladin cavalier, you can be a paladin cavalier. The banner and mount abilities, they are in the archetype.
So anybody who wants a faithful mount that scales with you as you level up, how many times have you wanted that on a class that didn't have it? Now there's an easy way to get it.
Yeah, so some of this is us playing around with how can we express a concept in a different way and see whether or not that works. I mean, ultimately, I think we ended up with somewhere around 40 classes for Pathfinder First Edition. That's an awful lot. And to be honest, some of those were just...
And we're going to do it again.
Some of... Well, no, we're not. No.
No,
we're not. No. Some of those classes were just two classes kind of smushed together. I'm looking at you, Blood Rager. Right? Or Scald. Right, and we just kind of, especially the ones from the Advanced Class Guide, originally started as something called hybrid classes, which were, we're going to take two classes and smush them together. And by the end of the playtest, people were like, well, I don't like it that I can't take levels of the original parent class, so just make them their own thing. And we were like, okay, I mean, that's what the playtest said they wanted, and everybody kind of agreed, so we changed it. But now looking at the way some of the things are built in the new edition, we kind of are looking back at some of those choices and going, I'm not sure I would make that a class anymore. I would make this an archetype that allows you to pick up some of those abilities. And with multiclassing now working as an archetype as well, some of those choices become even more clear. You can build a Magus using these rules. It is very simple to do. You just take either wizard or fighter, depending on which one you want to be a bit more of, and then take the archetype for the other one, and you're there. You are a Magus. You will function just about as good as the Magus used to function. Now, there's a few things that are probably missing that we might try and address in a different way if we actually just did a Magus archetype to kind of ride the center. But, you know, I'm not sure that needs to be its own class. There might be a better expression for that.
You now, can do spell combat now already. You can make one
everybody
attack.
Everybody can.
And anybody can. Amanda built a wizard who didn't even have the fighter archetype but was an elf and had a longsword and went into melee. Until she got hit with her low elf constitution, she was killing the things.
Yeah.
So, and after we figured out all of that, and we're going to make more crazy classes.
There will be, it's funny, there will be new interesting things that we can do with these rules that really kind of does open up some more class design decisions. But that's for another panel. I want to thank you guys all for coming. I hope you guys have a great Gen Con. I hope you guys participate in the playtest. We are looking forward to your feedback. Thank you.